Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Jesse Butler bought flowers. He took his girlfriend to the country club. He played pickleball with her family and even sat next to them at church on Sundays. Her parents thought he was a dream come true, polite, well-mannered, from a good family in Stillwater. And according to court documents, behind closed doors, he was strangling her until she lost consciousness while essaying her. A doctor later told her she was 30 seconds from dying. Police found video on his phone of him choking another victim. Allegedly threatened both girls, told them he'd hurt them if they said a word. This wasn't some stranger in a dark alley. This was the boyfriend, the guy everyone trusted, and that's exactly how it worked. So how does someone operate like this in plain sight? How does the charm coexist with the violence? What are the patterns that everyone missed? To break down this case that everyone is so enraged by, Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, former head of the Bureau's Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, and an expert on this sort of stuff, on human behavior, deception. And we're going to talk today about how predators build trust before they weaponize it, because there's many more Jesse Butlers out there in the world that are showing up to people's doorsteps with flowers, playing pickleball with the family, going to church. And usually it's a good sign of a good kid, but again, Not always. That's a mask, and it appeared to be certainly in this case. Robin, when you look at the documented behavior in this case, then you got the public charm, the private violence, the threats to maintain silence. What behavioral profile does that fit? Is this a pattern that's common out there?
Boy, multiple questions in there. Is it a pattern that's common?
Please say probably, no.
Yeah, I don't see it common, but it's recognizable is, I think, a better word to put for it. And that's because, you know, he was love bombing. He was hardcore love bombing, very much like cults get started. Not that he was forming a cult, but I think he would have loved a cult, right? Because he'd have a harem of people after him.
Oh, the future possibilities for Jesse.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Because it's exactly what he's doing. He's love bombing to put up this false facade. And we all grew up, at least hopefully most of us grew up, with that old saying that our parents gave us, if it seems a little too good to be true, it probably is.
Yep.
And he is one of those great cases of, so he's doing all these things to be kind, to bring flowers and all these things. So ask yourself this question. This is what I love doing when we're looking at human behavior. Does that fit a pattern of normal behavior of people in someone's life, or is it an outlier?
So what happens if it is an outlier? What happens if you've got this wonderful person?
You know, any time in life, Stacey, that we get an outlier, good, bad, or indifferent, kind of like when the Nutter Walsh was going to his car with all the cleaning supplies from Home Depot. That's an outlier, right? Especially if you're not there in construction clothes, you're just an average Joe with a mop up looking like you're trying to hide a dead body or clean up after.
Yeah.
An outlier. And same thing here. So we have an outlier of behaviors that deviate from a standard. Doesn't mean there's anything wrong and nefarious going on. It could be exactly what it is. But since it is an outlier, what it really requires us to do is a deeper dive. Let's take a little bit look closer. Let's get some objectivity in here and let's have conversations, good, healthy conversations with the people that are doing the closer interactions, like our kids, like the people at school, all these people. Because what we're now looking for is we're looking for things that are kind of deviating from that image, things that are deviating from a norm. And what we're also seeing from the records is that he was more isolating people. He was trying to remove them, trying to get them to all these little dribbles and drabs right there that healthy people that are doing the love bombing wouldn't do. So if you have incongruence in one hand with what you're seeing on the other hand, that's not just a red flag. That is generally fire because there's something going on. And when I see that unhealthy incongruence, that's when I give a deep pause and I have everyone in our lives and connect with them, take a step back and say, let's just take a closer look at this. And then because no one wants to be confronted with the fact that they may have made a bad choice about who they're dating, who they're going out with, because then that invalidates our choices and second guessing all that. That's why you don't confront people saying, hey, I think he's bad, or hey, what's going on, or what are you doing behind closed doors, you know, because defensive shields go up. You just ask a simple question. When you're with him, have you ever felt unsafe? Have you ever felt something was a little off? In other words, give them a lot of latitude with a nice open-ended question, because if you're with someone that has great intentions as they're portraying, then what you should have is a very congruent answer. Oh, yeah, everything's completely fine. I'm like, why? Why would you ask? You know, something very – their tempo of delivery is the same. The content of what they're saying is congruent with what he's displaying on the other side, because now if you get a pause and they have to think – if someone has to think when you ask a question about that, there's an issue.
Here's what I have issue with on all that is, okay, I completely agree. If you have a little more life reps, it'd be easier, I think, right, for a female to be able to answer that question honestly. And if you say, do you feel comfortable in the room with this person? If you go to a 16-year-old girl and ask them basically anything, I mean, and it's because they don't have reps. They're basing. They are beginning to create that track of life, of experience, and especially, you know, some of these more adult type experiences. It's brand new to them. So I don't know what they would have said, but on that same but on that same point, he's also only 17 years old when this is going on. Mm-hmm. So,
which is profound that he's already doing this at 17.
So that's my question is, how does he know the love bombing? I mean, how does he know these tactics? I mean, it's like, is he, you know, I think a lot of people, when they're going through the action of love bombing and stuff, they're not sitting there going, I'm going to go love bomb the shit out of her or him. It's their operating standard. It's how they move. It's what they know. They don't know that what they're doing is some sort of manipulative tactic, because it's probably been employed on them 1,000 times. Yep. And they think this is how people operate.
Yep.
And then they start operating that way. And sometimes it's not till later in life, when you get older, when you realize, oh, this isn't how healthy people operate. And he's 17 doing this. Now, obviously, I'm not here to accuse anybody or say, well, you know, here's why he's doing this. But he learned it somewhere. I don't think this isn't just natural behavior. I mean, this predatory type style of, let me choke you out, don't tell anybody, or I'm going to hurt you or hurt your family or hurt myself, because that's apparently part of it. He even threatened to hurt himself, which I say, let them, in the words of Mel Brooks. But
Mel Robbins.
Mel Robbins. Yeah.
Slightly different.
Yeah. But thank you. But it's that whole sort of thing. Like, why, where and how did this guy at 17 already have this kind of tactic going on? I mean, that to me is shocking in itself.
And it's something I think we need to pay attention to and I'm not a parent, so I can't say as parents, but I think it's important for us to understand where our boys, especially, are learning these things, and to, as Robin always says, communicate, talk to them, get in touch with them, find out what they're learning and have a dialogue about it.
And what our young girls are finding as acceptable behavior.
Correct.
Or thinking is normal as well.
Exactly.
Robin?
Yeah. So 100% on all that. And would I expect a 16-year-old girl without life reps to be able to recognize these things? No, but I would be also then taking, because again, that'd be victim blaming on this, and hell no, not at all.
Oh, no.
You know, but what it comes down to is then I'd be searching out data points from a lot of other people on this one. Because and I do this all the time in my own life, you know, where someone is standing out from a norm, I start collecting a lot of data from a lot of different points. So I can start painting a picture, and the picture I'm trying to always create is, what would cause someone to do this? And so we're seeing a behavior here of love bombing. And I totally agree. This is not a strategy he had. So let's go back to him real quick, because you first asked, like, where does someone like this get created? How does it get created? It gets created in a household where he was coddled without repercussions his entire life. As you saw when he's being arrested at the door, his mother is completely in charge.
Yep.
Didn't react because she's got reps of constantly coddling him. And him not being accountable for any actions he's ever taken. Don't worry about it. I got this. So-and-so knows this. Just sit here and say nothing, because mama's got it. Yeah. You know, like, so he's got life reps of never being accountable for any of his actions. So that's why doing anything is completely within his realm of possibility, because he's never gotten in trouble before. Why would this be any different? Mommy will come save me. And then you have cascade on top of that, because of that type of parenting style. Again, I'm not saying it's malicious or not. It's just a style. He hasn't had control out of anything his entire life. His parents have been in control of what? In control of the image. This is a family of image, because they're people of notoriety in the community, the football coach, you know, they're an image company. And so when the image starts failing, you know, they just have reps of protecting the image. And so he's used to that. So what has he never had? Control. And so this whole thing then goes back to, what's he need to have? He wants to have control without repercussions. And so that's where we start going down that dark triad of abuse, of strangulation, of sexual assault, because he's trying to exercise control. And that kind of control then manifests in, let's control you more by taking photos. So it's a combination of love bombing, which is kind of cultish, and there's all the grooming behaviors in here as well. When you're grooming someone for sexual exploitation, all of it is present with him.
How much do you think the parents are to blame in this situation? And I don't mean, you know, let's point fingers, but they are so involved in this kid's family, in this kid's life on a day-to-day basis. Do they hold some responsibility here?
So every individual makes their own choices in life. Now, granted, between the ages of 9 and 24, before the prefrontal lobe is fully forming, you know, there's a lot of lack of emotional control and emotional regulation going on. but it's still their choice about what they're doing. And those choices are, unless there's biological and chemical imbalances going on in the brain, those choices are a lot of learned behaviors. And so I don't, it's a tough, he learned the behaviors of what he's doing because he's observing it from others in his life. Not that he's learning how to rape and abuse kids.
Yeah.
They are kids, but he's learning the lack of accountability for his actions from his parents, from the people in his environment. So, because that's what the root of this is. Because, you know, they did an interesting experiment years ago, and they do all these social experiments all the time. You know, a lot of people will do really important things, but the thing that keeps a lot of people in society, not all of us, but a thing that keeps a lot of society in line is the thought of being caught, the thought of someone watching you do something. So they had this experiment, I think they did it in France, where they actually left a wallet on a street corner. And they had passerbys go by, and it was simple. There was you could pick up the wallet, and they want to see what people did. Strangers would do with a wallet they found. And on one street corner, there was nothing there but a wallet on the ground. On another street corner, they actually just had a poster with eyes on it. On the street corner with a poster with eyes, much fewer people picked up the wallet without turning it in.
Wow.
Because if we think we're being observed, if we think there's accountability, it modifies our behavior. And so when in cases like this, granted, it's one data point. If you don't think you have accountability for your actions, you feel a lot more at liberty to do crazy things.
I got a caveat to this because this is a weird one in this case. He taped it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He taped it. It's not like he wouldn't like
trophy.
So yeah, trophy, but accountability. Eyes on you. I mean, is that just the arrogance of thinking that no one's ever going to see this tape? That this is just completely, is that just him being a complete idiot?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, because it's like, that to me, it's like, if you're going to commit some sort of horrible crime, the last thing you want is it on tape. And this dipshit pulls out his phone and starts filming.
Yeah, he's the one doing it.
It's my phone. Mommy never looks at my phone. Seriously,
transparency.
If you think it's someone else's eyes, he won't do it. But if it's his own eyes, it's my phone.
It's different.
Yeah. But again, that's true. That's why there's so many elements of a really abhorrent person in development in this case. I mean, we're seeing signs of the grooming. We're seeing signs of cult like mentality with love bombing. Now we're seeing signs of trophy taking. What kind of people take trophies of doing bad things to girls? Serial killers. I mean, not that he's going down there, but there's a lot of really abhorrent behavior that is extremely incongruent. And then, and let's give him some counseling.
That'll work it out.
Yeah, that'll change.
Give him a couple Oreo cookies or something too. I'm sure that'll just make his day. It's a very bizarre byproduct because I see parents like this all the time that are basically, I think the way you described it the first time we talked about this case was the kid's like wrapped in bubble wrap, basically. Oh, yeah. Like mom's been there the whole time. I mean, you saw it when he was being arrested. We talked about it. You know, stay silent. You know, Rick knows about this. Candy's doing this. Dad's on the way. That old bullshit. This utter coddling, keeping them close to the nest. It's like, did she stop breastfeeding when he was 14? I don't like. It's like when I'm just kidding.
Walked out the door right there. Look at him.
Yeah, but it makes you wonder. Like when you keep someone that close and you don't allow them their own autonomy, you're basically making a monster. And there's no boundaries and there's no accountability. Yes, it may look great for those Christmas cards until he's 18, and now look what your Christmas cards are. I mean, this is. It makes me wonder how much these parents were shocked by this behavior. And this is all just pure conjecture, but how much his parents were shocked by his behavior when they found it out, when they were confronted with the video. Because it's not even just this girl saying this and that girl saying this, and there's a pattern, which is bad enough, but it's on tape, your own son's damn phone. So when you're confronted with that, were they truly shocked? I'm wondering. And I'm saying they might have been, because they thought their way of parenting was right. I don't think they went into this going, let's create Rosemary's Baby. Let's make the best, you know, this little monster and make him the best monster we can. That's not what they wanted. So, but because they were too tied up in the way they thought that they could control everything, this is the byproduct.
Yeah. So my guess is, again, my guess in conjecture is that this was an escalation of them bailing him out of things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the shock, I don't think it was shock. I think it was probably more in lines of, oh, shit, another one.
Yeah. What did he do now?
And then probably into, I guarantee you, the first impulse was victim blaming on their part, because he never does anything wrong. And he does things wrong, but, you know, they're always little things. So he's that boiling frog in their mind. You know, so he keeps doing more and more things wrong, and yet they never notice how abhorrent these things that they're bailing him out of are and becoming, because they're so, they have reps of bailing him out from the age of 4 years old on, and then keeping him wrapped in. And I know parents that do this. I mean, you know, we're probably some semblance of those kind of parents that, you know, you want to protect your kids.
Yeah.
But when the difference is that when you want to protect your kids, but you don't have accountability for when you do something wrong, this is what happens. So parents can do exactly the same kind of parenting, but their kids turn out fine, although they're going to need some life reps of failure. But there's a big difference between protecting them when they do something wrong and allowing them to do something wrong and then correcting it in a healthy way. And you can still keep both in bubble wrap if you want. So I'm not like shaming parents that bubble wrap their kids. It's just like bubble wrapping your kids and having no accountability for doing boo-boos.
Yeah.
Well, and that's
the abhorrent thing, obviously, but this was an escalation. Hands down, I think it was an escalation.
I've watched kids grow up where, you know, they've got a helicopter parent who doesn't want them to do anything wrong. Well, they don't learn anything. Let them fall on their face. Be there when they do to support them and be there for them and guide them for the next moment. But you've got to let these kids make mistakes. They don't have to be huge mistakes.
Just not
let them live.
Got to get a rep.
If they're able to have smaller mistakes and just a cacophony of them before something like this, you don't get the nuclear bomb mistake.
Correct.
He did not go from having an innocent first date, getting a milkshake, to raping a girl and almost killing her like this.
Right.
No.
It just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. And there was lead ups to this. I guarantee you there's going to be other girls or other situations that are going to come out that were maybe not to this extreme, but experienced some really deviant behavior from him, or that he tried or wanted to do with them, that wanted to experiment with them. And because there's always, you know, people like this get to his level, even at 17, get to his level of acumen of what he was doing with reps.
Yeah.
He learned how to love bomb. He knew how to push someone to be able to get photos without shaming or using them afterwards. This is a level of expertise he got to this level at 17 with reps.
Yeah.
And so there's going to be other people that can come forward if they're brave enough. And this, again, not shaming enough. Hard things come forward on. But I guarantee there's other people, because these are not the only girls or only situations where he was displaying behavior. And so going back to my original thing with leakage, basically, there's going to be a lot of leakage where someone is putting on this false front. I guarantee you there's people around him that if they hear someone saying, oh, my God, he's such a great guy, he's so kind, he brings flowers. I guarantee you there's people around him or people that are aware of him. They're going like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was
are they going to want to come forward after seeing how he just got off with community service? Like, why would any victim want to put themselves into this situation knowing that they're probably going to be shamed and nothing's going to happen? If this had happened to me, I probably would be like Homer Simpson going back into the bushes. Like, oh, I'm not putting myself into this situation.
Look, you're completely right. So when people have influence and that public persona in a community, you're very afraid of, you know, we can look at the examples we've had. We've got the Murdoch case, we've got Diddy, we got Epstein, you have all these other people that did all these abhorrent behaviors that people observed, yet were terrified to do anything against because there's such an influence in the community. And so in this case, you have a judge that's been there for 50 years in one capacity or the other. You have a father that's part of the university. This is scary stuff when it comes to, remember, the greatest motivation we have as human beings, as a species, is fear. Fear is a great driver of our actions. And if you fear any way whatsoever, especially if it doesn't benefit you in some way, because remember, in order for us to take actions, we have to overcome the fear. And the benefit that we personally feel that we're going to get from the risk of that fear has to overpower that balance. It's a rough one.
It is. Jesse Butler is who we're talking about. He was arrested. He was charged as an adult. He faced 78 years in prison on 11 felony counts, including SA, attempted SA, and domestic assault by strangulation. Two victims, video evidence, medical records showing injuries so severe one girl needed surgery on her neck, and then something happened. A judge granted youthful offender status. The charges didn't disappear, but the consequences did. Butler walked out with 150 hours of community service, counseling sessions, and supervision until his 19th birthday, which is going to be in August of 26. If he follows the rules until then, his record gets wiped clean. No prison, no registry, nothing. The victim's families say they were never consulted about the plea deal. Their attorneys say both girls were ready to testify. That choice was taken from them. Now protesters surround the courthouse at every hearing. A state lawmaker is demanding a grand jury investigation, and the families are asking a question that doesn't have a good answer. Who exactly did the system protect? To dig into what went wrong and what it signals, Robin Drake is with us, FBI, retired FBI special agent, head of the FBI's behavioral analysis program, and someone who's seen firsthand how institutions either serve justice or fail the people they are supposed to protect. I want to start with this family and the girls. The families have said that the victims here, the ones that were essayed and choked out, one nearly 30 seconds away from death, had to have surgery, will forever have a scar that she gets to look at every day and go, huh, hey, Jesse, too. They wanted to testify.
Yep.
They wanted to face their attacker in court. But the prosecuting attorney and the DA and the judge, they all made this agreement. The victims had zero choice in this matter. And they all said, no, this is going to protect you, so you guys don't have to do that. Hope you're happy. I mean, institutional failure here? Wishful thinking? Ignorant thinking? What the hell do you think was going on amongst the decision makers here?
I think it's bias. I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, because it's very subjective when you do things like this, but how can it not be anything but bias? And especially if you have a situation where perception's everything, you know, because if someone perceives something as being unjust, then it's unjust until you can show it's not, and people don't believe it is. And when you actually have to have trust and faith in our organizations, institutions that keep us safe, part of that is our faith in it, which comes from our perceptions. And if the perception is there's a bias because the judge has been there so long that and there's no objectivity here, then that's the reality. And so And look what it's done to public trust of the institutions, organizations. But what it clearly looks to me is bias. Because when you look at the law, when you look at recidivism, when you look at all the things that go around this, the judge followed the law, did not follow ethical and moral common sense, I think, mm-hmm. but the law is followed. And she's got a history of doing things like this from other rulings, and she's been called out on it before. And I think – so here's what I think is really telling in this case. And I did some research on this group because I really love the fact that you have an outside organization, CLEAN, which he was referred to for community service, and that's the Cleaning Our Land and Environment. And I thought this was some sort of rehab program or the counseling program. No, this is actually just a community program that actually is about cleaning up let's see, their core mission statement is to empower Oklahoma citizens, preserve and enhance the state's natural beauty while ensuring a healthy, sustainable environment. This is what he's referred to for his community service. They denied him.
I was going to ask, how do I join?
Yes,
so I can find him and show up and be one of the people helping clean up Oklahoma.
So when you think about that, so here's a completely objective organization that stands for exactly what they said. What a great organization, you know, doing right. Volunteers, yeah. I actually looked up their reputation. I looked up their leadership, their voluntary board of directors. They denied accepting him into the program because they say he is their – So think about this. You're a volunteer organization that does this, and you have all these beautiful people come in to help out to clean up. And now you're saying you're going to let this guy in? They knew, based on looking at this case, that people would be afraid to volunteer. It would hurt their image to allow someone like that in. So that does not, not, that just says it all right there to me. It's like, listen, the public perception is you made a mistake on the sentencing, because not even such a beautiful organization like this that you want to refer him to for community service will accept him.
Yeah.
But think of the opportunities, Clean Up Oklahoma or whatever it's called. If you, just saying, you could be out there on the side of the road. You know, this is how, and if this piece of paper that I'm holding right here accidentally blows into the roadway or the oncoming traffic is coming, Jesse, chase it. Don't look both ways. Just chase the paper. Go for it. You know,
no, that would only happen if the Gonsalves
were there with Koberger.
Yes.
I don't know. If I was one of these dads, I think I'd be joining that group. Chase the paper, Jesse. Don't that 18 wheeler. He'll stop in time for you.
Think, you know, it'll this is going to be really interesting to watch over the next couple of years. I'm hard pressed to think he's not going to have issues coming up somewhere else.
I'm excited to watch him grow and mature into a young man.
Let's keep him away from girls.
Let's keep him away from society.
Yeah.
Yeah, Judge Susan Worthington, who granted youthful offender status, she holds 2 degrees from Oklahoma State, where Butler's father worked. There's no direct impropriety that's been proven. The optics are terrible. You were bringing up bias. And I guess my thought on that is, okay, bias. Are you saying bias because they're OSU folks, because they, you know, it's a fairly, the dad's been in the program forever. Other, as far as I know, other than, you know, their lucky little boy here has had, they've had a fairly, you know, good reputation in the community, whatever, you know. Is that the bias? Because they seem like nice folks.
I'm going to give her a lot of benefit of the doubt. I give every human being benefit of the doubt.
Sure.
And here's how I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt of the bias that she has. I'm not saying it's biased because it's a type of bias where she's doing something wrong, or that she sees, you know, any kind of bias that people are typically. I'm thinking that her bias is this, and because this kind of goes to the other cases I saw that she's done this on. Again, there's only been a couple.
Yeah,
I think her bias is that she sees good in all children, and. And then that's a positive bias, but that's the bias that she has. And she thinks that all children can be saved and should be given the opportunity to be saved. I don't think she's actually objective enough to look at this without that lens to see the violence of what actually was done.
But you have more than just the judge here. You have the DA, you have the process. I mean, there was like a group decision here to like.
Yeah. So
any one of them could have said. This is kind of a pattern of behavior here. That's where, like, I get bias, but at the same point, are they just not looking at the charges? I mean, and the video? I mean, it's on video.
It's not like he stole a Snickers looks at this. Bar.
I don't know how anybody looks at this. Bar.
I think you have one powerful judge with a lot of influence, with a lot of time in the community that says, I'd like to see if we could explore this. And again, when fear comes in there, fear for job, fear for all these things, and the judge with 50 years in the area, not on the bench to 50 years, but 50 years as a lawyer in the area, graduate of the area with a lot of influence in the community, says they want to look at it this way, it becomes confirmation bias in a group because, judge says we can do it. Judge says she wants to do it. It's legal to do.
Why and it's just like, well, we got other things to worry about here today, too, which, you know, could be part of the thing. I mean, I don't think any of them realized when they were making these choices, hey, this might backfire incredibly on us.
It's just like Delphi. No one thinks it's going to backfire. No one thinks it's going to get the attention it does because and you know why they think that? Because they have reps of doing it before where it didn't. I mean, it's
just, yeah. And, so, yeah, I mean, that's true.
Yeah,
one of the comments in our section, and this one really stands out to me, is Gen Z saying dad pulls a lot of weight in that community too. Though remember, he's a coach for football, and if you think of some of these communities,
was
correct. These communities and the way they basically life revolves around sports. Like this is ingrained in their culture. This isn't just something that they go to on Friday nights. This is everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what would have happened if this family, if they worked in retail or fast food versus OSU, would this have been different?
Mm-hmm.
I think so. I hate saying it, but you know, you don't have the data points on it, but you can envision a world doing a thought experiment where it would have a different outcome.
Yeah.
That's why it's completely removed.
It's kind of the comparison I think I would make is when you're so into something, you really don't want to see it as being awful or bad or something. Mm-hmm. Take Michael Jackson, for example.
Yeah.
Like, great music. Innovator, you know, but then you're like, oh, there's a lot of smoke. Granted, he was never convicted, but like, there's a lot of smoke over here. Looks like there could be a fire. There's a lot of people with seemingly telling the same story. And, you know, mm-hmm. you can go down the road of anybody else. I mean, there's plenty of people who blazed trails, who did great things. And then the other side were like, holy shit, Bill Cosby, R. Kelly. There's a lot of people who had great runs that weren't necessarily looked at as the evil monsters that they are. But, you know, in hindsight, oh, shit. And it took it with all of these people. And there's still today people that don't accept reality on reality's terms for what they likely are or what they've admitted to being. Sort of that same kind of thing when it comes to, you know, your local sports, especially in communities where, like Stacey said, it's life.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We want to hold people up on pedestals where we can see them as infallible. And because that makes us feel better about ourselves. I mean, and you name so many good ones, but I read so much history, and one of the people that keeps popping up in history that I keep coming across, and I mentioned it a second ago, was Kennedy. You know, JFK, he saved us in the Bay of Pigs. You know, but everything outside of that, he's a completely abhorrent human being. You know, his behaviors, his sexual addiction, you know, Marilyn Monroe cheating on his wife, taking pain pills, popping. I mean, he was a disaster of a human being, you know, but he was so, people didn't want to believe it. So they turned the blind eyes. So because we want to hold people like this up on it's Camelot, you know, on pedestal, they called it at the time, you know. So again, when you see things like that, as a behaviorist, as an observer of human behavior, as a human being, you take a step back and just examine without bias, without saying it's good, bad, or indifferent. Just observe, because your observations at that point can give you the clarity to not judge it as, now granted, this is clearly right or wrong, but to see the data coming in saying, all right, people are saying this. And if someone is saying something either really horrible or really great about someone and it stands out from everything else, you just got to sit back and just really start taking in all of it and getting a clear picture, asking people. And this is really the key on situations like this, asking people that are completely detached from it, sharing all the information you can without your own biases inflicted as great as possible, and ask them what they think. You know, what do you see here? What, because this is what we do for each other. It's my wife and I do it for each other and everything. We do it as a team, but this is what we do as human beings. When we are so close to something that we're not going to recognize it for what it is, you have to get an objective opinion on it. And if it stands out from the norm of anything, good, bad, or indifferent, as I said it numerous times, and I'll always say it, is there's no emergency takeoffs. There's no emergency engagements. You know, no one's saying you have to go now. You have to give an answer now. You have to engage someone now. Dude, if you're getting some odd things coming in that are deviating, slow down. Because you know what? If they're that interested in you, they still will be tomorrow. Just take a break and take a second to really think hard about these things. Because in every single one of these cases, that's what happens. And here's the other thing too. Go back to the last episode I was on last week with y'all, if you all are tuning in, and go through that checklist of emotionally intelligent people. Mm-hmm. Because once again, we have a big ass signs from this kid. His EQ was bottomed out zero.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So just stay away from emotionally unintelligent people.
Does it also suck people in more and create a bias in an unconscious bias, I would say, when someone identifies with the entity or the group as part of their own DNA?
Oh, yeah.
For example, like when we're talking about sports here, it's we, even though nobody, the people who are on the team are a group of children. It's not the 48-year-olds and everybody in the stands, but it's a we type thing. So that, and the same with music too. I mean, people start identifying, those songs become the soundtracks to people's lives. They define moments and emotions and times in one's life that that becomes part of them. So then having to look at these things that are part of you, there's almost like this transferred guilt, even though you had nothing to do with like being the monster that right. Jesse Butler is. But if you were to say, you've been saying we all this time on this team, and this guy is part of that institution, then there's that, and nobody wants to admit that maybe something that they're a part of, or that they assign themselves to be a part of, you know, mentally, has something dark going on with it.
Absolutely.
So it's easier just to pretend, no, than, well, let me hear you out.
Yeah, Robert Greene's laws of human nature. We consume information that validates our own self-opinion. And to invalidate it, it goes against who we are and what we believe in. And so especially when it comes to sports cultures, school cultures, I mean, hell, people make billions of dollars off of sports and marketing of sports and being identified with sports. I mean, think about this. Mm-hmm. If that wasn't true, no one would ever sell a jersey or a baseball hat with a team logo on it. You know, but you want to be caught. And so, and then if you're part of that nation, you know, you automatically get some automatic implied trust just from the fact that you're wearing a similar baseball hat. I mean, it's even more so if you actually have a little more shared suffering, a little more exclusive club. Me and another fellow Marine, hands down, I'll talk to you for hours on end. Mm-hmm. And you don't, what happens is you don't want to believe something abhorrent by someone on your team because that's the tribe mentality. Everyone on the tribe. And why? So let's go back to the reason why we have that mentality. In order to survive, ancient tribal man, we have to belong to a tribe. And why do we want to belong to a tribe? Because it made us feel safe. Again, the prime motivator, safety, security, and prosperity. Our tribe made us feel safe. And to say someone on the tribe is unsafe, one, it invalidates our own judgment, and we don't like saying we suck at something. And so we judge someone wrong, and it also makes us feel unsafe because if that person's bad, who else could be bad? He's probably just fine. So we rationalize away things that might make us feel unsafe or not as good as we thought we were about something. And so we give a hell of a lot of grace to people that don't deserve it because of that mentality. I mean, just look at Koberger. I'm not saying this is exactly what happened at WSU, but he was given so much grace at the university at which he's a teaching assistant, and a horrible one, horrible. I mean, he was horrible as a teaching assistant. Yet they kept giving him a chance, Why? Yeah. He's on staff. He must be okay. Criminal justice. We're all in criminal justice studying together. He must be okay. You see, it's that tribe mentality. Yeah. It's a great binder between us. It allows us to evolve beyond the tribe 150, like the chimpanzees.
Yeah.
But it gives too much grace sometimes.
Well, it always works for the people who are higher up in the tribe, and it always has. But the thing is, the also thing about tribal mentality, not just what we're living today, but if we go back in time, there was always people in the tribe that weren't going to be very happy. They were the ones that were getting raped. They were the ones that were getting walked on. They were the ones that were doing the grunt work. It's not just always work your way up and you're going to do better. There's always been those darker parts of the tribe, and you had to accept that as being part of the tribe. Because it's better than being eaten by wolves or the Neanderthals outside of the tribe. You would put up with the horrible treatment because, well, they're not killing me at least.
And that's how cults get started.
Yeah.
It's the same exact mentality. The only difference between a good, healthy tribe and a cult is the sexual nature of the leader, abusing people, and doing things for profit at the sacrifice of others. Yeah. Remove those things and you have a tribe. I mean, that's why as soon as you see love bombing, because one of the first things you do when you're forming a cult is you love bomb people into the tribe as you're slowly escalating, you know, the narcissism, self-centeredness of it. And then the trauma bonding that happens because you start slowly making them more and more uncomfortable, but love bombing them on the other side, decreasing the love bombing, increasing the discomfort. And then your discomfort goes into shame. Shame goes into you making them do things that they wouldn't otherwise do to harm others and make profit off of it.
Coming up next in How to Start a Cult, Robin's going to teach us a favorite cult casserole recipe involving cornflakes. That's coming up. Stay tuned. Let's move on to another case. 18-year-old Anna Kempner died on a cruise ship. Her 16-year-old stepbrother is the suspect. Since then, we've heard wildly different accounts. Grandparents saying everything was fine. You know, and I get it. They're grandparents. They're going to see things through their prisms. Parents pushing the happy blended family narrative, the three amigos, while the ex-boyfriend and other stepbrother describe aggression, chokeholds, and tension. The adults claim they never saw that. So how do investigators read these statements? What signals truth and what signals damage control? Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, former chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program, is with us to help break all of this down. Robin, when you're looking at conflicting statements from family members after a tragedy like this, what are your first behavioral cues that tells you, you know, someone's being truthful versus someone protecting a narrative versus someone just seeing it through their prism in a really innocent way?
You know, the first thing that strikes me when you hear a lot of conflicting statements is, wow, no one in this family is close at all because no one's talking. No one has the same context.
True.
You know, it's not even everyone can come together to create the same story. There's zero cohesion of family units. And that's the first thing I see. And then because there's such chaos, you really take everything with a grain of salt, meaning that the likelihood of truth, a lot of truth coming out of these statements is slim to none. But here's what you can gain from those statements is there congruence between who they're trying to protect in those statements? I think that's what I'd be going for, as well as other leakage of other people that could give me data points that are going to be more accurate. Because in this case, family members, grandparents, all these things, I think you're going to get some data points, but you're not going to get a lot of truth. The truth is going to come from people like boyfriends that saw things from again, that objectivity side. And then forensic evidence is the only thing you'll be left with, because getting accurate statements from people that are all over the place and in a lot of denial. I literally don't think they knew much, because I don't think they gave a rat's ass. I don't think they paid much attention to what was going on at all. Because if they did, they wouldn't have done what they did.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at this too, and I'm looking at the parents, and they obviously, they have their own bizarro origin story. But at the same point, none of that really, does it tie in directly to this death, this murder? No, but it's pieces of the recipe. It's pieces of the ingredients of, well, this is the environment that was around. And when you stir all that together and put it in the microwave on high for 30 minutes, this is what you get.
And it's the pieces that are missing in this relationship as well. What they're not doing as parents.
Yeah. There's so many questions. Yeah, exactly. The ex-boyfriend he spoke up in the parking lot after the funeral, and I think has been one of the most valuable voices in this, giving us some context to what was going on. He has no custody battle to win. He has no family loyalty here. He's describing a very different dynamic, and he's got nothing to lose. He's got nothing to win either. In fact, going out and making those statements, probably not something he thought of, but like, you're saying some very libel things by making these statements out loud without proof other than your statements. And you could see, like, right at the end, an adult got to him and kind of ushered him away very quickly, but the damage had been done. He said his part, and he describes a very different dynamic. How much weight do investigators typically put on outside witnesses like that versus family members?
You give it a lot of weight if there's nothing, like you said, when there's nothing to be gained and there's no agenda and it's also off the cuff like that, it tends to be very, very accurate and true to his observations and his context. And that kind of context is really important in these situations. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of voluntary statement, so impromptu like that, gives me a lot to work with, because that's the road I'm going to go down. Because remember, at the very onset of this, typically when you look at situations like this, I'm always looking for patterns and past behaviors of individuals and based upon previous cases, because that shows us where to look. And in this case in particular, within the first couple seconds, I said, all right, we've got to look internal, because just the opening statements, and we've seen this throughout so far, there seems to be an appearance of negligence or lack of parenting going on throughout. A lack of communication between family members. I think that's more accurate, because I don't want to say someone's a bad parent, because I have no idea. But there appears to be a lack of communication between family members, them themselves, them with the kids. And so when you have someone on the outside validating that through their observations, and then what they're saying is completely incongruent from what you're hearing from family members, that gives you pause. But from the very onset, I was like, we got to look internal because there seems to be a lack of communication, a lack of reality that's coming about from the family members. When the dad first said that she was feeling ill, she went to bed early, and then we didn't see her again or start missing her until around noon the next day. I'm like, what? That's just, again, that's a pattern of behavior that shows a lack of communication. I won't say anything else, just a lack of communication that seems to be incongruent with what I would expect from a parent on a cruise with a daughter. And so you would expect something more. You expect, again, not saying right or wrong. It's a deviation. So when I see a deviation, internal vice external, that's where I'm looking, because you didn't hear a report of anything else of, oh, she's hanging out with someone with people at night. She went out to a nightclub a couple nights in a row. There's this guy hanging around we don't like. I mean, so that's what you're looking for. You're looking for, all right, what's standing out and from the data coming in? And the first thing that stood out, parent statements.
Yeah.
Well, we the fact that, you know, they hadn't heard from her in a while. She's on a ship.
Nuts.
Numerous things could have happened. She's surrounded by strangers. She's surrounded by the ocean. You don't see your daughter for how long? And you're like, eh, whatever.
And especially since, I mean, again, I'll time date this a little bit, but there's just this case. You remember, we got that guy that is the family is suing Royal Caribbean or something like that, because he was served, what was it, 35 drinks before they even left port?
Yes.
And your daughter then is missing, and you haven't seen your daughter for almost, well, let's see, it's at least 12 hours, if not longer. Yeah. And she said she's sick. You know, you'd want to check. That's why I'm saying, that's why, again, not that.
I want to know how that even happened.
Like, 35.
I honest to God, because when you're on a cruise ship, I mean, unless he's drinking other people's drinks, there's limits. Even when you have the unlimited drink pass, you have to, like, there's timing on these cards. Like, you can't just
dry, man.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even like, you'd like almost have to be there like on the, like whatever minute mark it is, like next one, and then slamming it and waiting the 10 minutes or whatever the hell it is next one. I don't even know how you do it. I don't know how the ship would have served him that much. There should have been, the system should have stopped it. I mean, I think there's limits. I don't know. I know there are some limits within those systems. So how the fuck he got 35 drinks in him that before they left port? That's like, what? Anyway, that's a whole other case.
But it goes to the point of this case, which is saying, like, listen, this is the kind of environment that you're in.
Yeah.
You know, to not have communication for that period of time with someone claiming to be sick, as well as, you know, all right, so, and you have two other kids in the room.
Yeah.
They're not telling you that she's missing. They're not. I mean, no one is asking how is she doing. Nowhere in here does anyone make the statement that we asked the other kid, how's she feeling? Did you see her this morning? Nowhere in there. So that's what I'm saying. There, it's not necessarily what was said or what was done. It what wasn't. That's what stands out. There's no communication that's been exhibited by anyone that anyone checked on her. A sister, a brother, a grandparent. I mean, no one.
We got, there's testimony now from the, for those of you playing along at home, I know this is a confusing case. The stepbrother, this is one who's 18, who's with the dad. This is the older brother of the 16-year-old who's being looked at as a suspect. So this is mom number three that they're on the cruise with. This is her oldest son. And he's testifying in the custody hearing that Anna's dad, this is Anna's dad is the one, obviously it's Anna's dad. I won't go through that life cycle. That he held him in a chokehold when he didn't want to go basically with them back to visit them. He wanted to stay with dad, and stepdad here, Anna's dad, allegedly, according to the 18-year-old, put him in a chokehold to get him to comply, basically. And I'm not blaming dad. I'm not saying that that made the 16-year-old do this, but I'm saying, well, this is interesting. If that's true, and this is part of the culture of, I mean, What adult is putting a child in a freaking chokehold to begin with for any reason?
An effed up one.
Yeah.
It's just not a healthy behavior. And so when a child observes how punishment is doled out through chokeholds, does it surprise you that someone then uses a chokehold on someone else?
No.
I mean, anytime you see someone in elementary school, middle school, or even up to high school do it in behavior at school, where do you think they learned it?
Exactly.
I mean, seriously. I mean, it all comes back to things that they observe in their environment at home, you know, mm-hmm. whether from other siblings, friends or neighbors too. I mean, you can, but generally the people you spend the most time around is where you learn the behaviors from.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like you said, there's your pattern.
100%. And so does it surprise me? Nope. Not whatsoever. It's also interesting then too, in the horrible, tragic way, is that they make excuses for it. It's just roughhousing. No, it's not. That's not roughhousing. I roughhouse with my son all the time, and believe me, he's never choked me out.
but when this is your environment and this is the people that you surround yourself with, and people like this do these sort of things, and they all like it's roughhousing to these people, it is. And that's their definition. It's not the definition of it to the rest of the world, right, to healthy thinking. But when you're only surrounded by unhealthy individuals and you're an unhealthy individual yourself, the baseline is unhealthy. You all think you're healthy.
Yeah. And then when the daughter, Anna, says that she doesn't like it, it's unacceptable, don't do that, the cult then says, oh, no, nope, it's just normal. You're wrong.
Yeah. That's the environment so many kids are growing up in. I mean, it's not anything new, but that is the environment. And we are in a world now where it's being exposed in ways that no one has ever seen before. Because all these things could used to be hidden behind doors, behind lies, behind excuses. Now everybody's got one of these and everybody can take a video of pretty much anything on the inside. And we're all like, oh my God, clutching our pearls. I can't believe this is going on behind the doors of this home where they're hoarding 42 cats and it looks like nobody's bathed in the last 5 months. I can't imagine anything wrong happening here. Surprise.
Yeah, and then when you get caught up in that cult of comparison because people are posting their 5-second highlight reels on TikTok or on Instagram or something, it makes you feel worse about yourself because like, oh, my life sucks compared to that. And so you go down. Yeah. That's how people start spiraling down. Yeah. That's how self-radicalization happens.
Yeah. At least I'm not that bad. I'm bad, but at least I'm not that.
Oh, yeah. So I can keep doing the behaviors I am because I'm not as bad as that. That's another reason, too.
In ways it justifies it. Because there's always something slightly worse. Did you ever think we were going to get worse than Springer?
Oh, please. Jerry.
Did you ever think that the stories were going to start to get worse than Springer?
You know, when you look back at the Jerry Springer story, you're like, man, that was really tame.
Jesus. It is.
Pretty
it
normal.
Literally is in so many ways. Between this, there's that other story out of Michigan right now, the Rebecca Park, I believe.
Rebecca Park. Is it Parks?
Rebecca Park. Yeah, this one here. This is have you seen this one yet, Robin?
No.
You don't want to.
Yeah, don't go.
If we don't have to talk about it, you may want to spare yourself the mental space.
But now you made curiosity.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's like there. The Hills Have Eyes, like the sequel that's 10 times worse than the original.
All these things have so desensitized us as an environment. I remember, all my years in the FBI, I became very desensitized towards seeing things that were different and strange by a lot of people's optics. And so it always makes my wife wonder. Is like, I'm never shocked or surprised by anything I see. And even more so now because these things are even more crazy.
What's been worse? The things you would see in your position with the FBI or what we talk about on this show.
It's actually come to on par. They really, there's probably more of it on this side than on the bureau side because cases take a long time and you tend to be focused on your case like this. And again, when you're working in the world of counterintelligence, you're working spy recruitment and espionage, and you'll get the bleed over to abhorrent people doing abhorrent things.
Sure.
And you help out on a lot of cases and you do a lot of different things. And you also interview a lot of pretty interesting people as well. That's probably the biggest thing is like interviewing people from all over the world as potential sources because they're connected to strange and unusual people. Mm-hmm. That's where you see some real characters.
But compared to this, everyone's on par. There's a lot of nerds. It's just
strange,
a lot of nerds
and unusual people. I like how you phrase that.
It's a great, big, beautiful world.
It is. As I say all the time, it's a great show. Although some of it is horrendously tragic. But yeah. Ooh, it's the horrible part about it, team, is that it's so predictable and it's so avoidable. Yeah. You know, and that's so sad about each one of these cases. You're sitting back and we watch another one and we're like, if everyone watching our show and you know knows how much we say the same things because the patterns are predictable. And the craziest thing is because there's not a lot of things you can do a lot of times tragically to save children from these horrendous households. But the things that are so amazing to us is when we see these perpetrators with no emotional intelligence whatsoever. All the red flags are spiking all over the place, and yet they still do it. I mean,
they still do it, and there really isn't anything to stop them. Half the
I know.
Time. That's the yeah. There's no safeguards in place in society to truly stop them until they do something horrible, and then they become this.
And they get community service.
Yeah, exactly.
From people that don't even want them. I mean, you got a voluntary organization that picks up trash. And you suck so bad at life that they don't want you.
You're trashier. They don't want you near the trash. You're such a piece of trash.
Yeah, you are below the trash. You're picking up so bad that they refuse to have you volunteer to pick up their trash because you scare everyone there.
Jesse, the future is so bright. You got to wear their shades. Did you see the picture with those shades on?
Where the
courthouse, he looks like the biggest oaf, and then mom's still you got to be so proud as parents of this, you dipshits.
They better
she's going to be a really bad mother-in-law.
Hope to God that just doesn't happen.
Hope
to God, like, his name is known so much that no one will ever touch him.
Well, he's got to be able to find someone who's willing to move into his mother's basement with him, because that's going to be at the rest of his life.
Exactly.
There it is.
Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. His latest book, Unbreakable Alliances, available wherever books are sold. Get it for yourself, your loved ones, this holiday season. Until next time, for Robin, Stacey, and Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay, okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
This is Matt Rogers from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
This is Bowen Yang from Las Culturistas with Matt Rogers and Bowen Yang.
Hey, Bowen, it's gift season.
Ugh, stressing me out. Why are the people I love so hard to shop for?
Probably because they only make boring gift guides that are totally uninspired. Except for the guide we made.
In partnership with Marshalls, where premium gifts meet incredible value.
It's giving gifts! With categories like best gifts for the mom whose idea of a sensible walking shoe is a stiletto.
Or best gifts for me that were so thoughtful I really shouldn't have.
Check out the guide on Marshalls.com.
And gift the good stuff at Marshalls.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.